See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
They're coming. Get you, Barbara.
Got a death curse!
There was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
Sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
You Cinescare.
Welcome to the Cinescare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us this week, we have a very special guest, a writer, producer, director. No, not yet. Not director yet. Okay. But writer, producer, and he's been on, and actually he's been on the show before, Mr. Andy Griskowiak.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
I'd love to be back. It's great to see you guys.
Yeah, it's too. Great having you back. And we're, you know, especially this time because you've got a brand new movie out. I know last time we talked to you, I think in November, and it was about Black Friday.
Yeah.
And, but that had been out a little while, but now you got a new movie out. In fact, I talked about it, you know, listeners may remember I talked about it a month or two ago when it came out. It had a brief run here in LA. But now it is available on streaming, for rent on Amazon and pretty much anywhere you rent movies, right?
Yeah. All the major ones, Apple, Fandango, Microsoft.
Yeah,
I will one up that. It's not only available for rent, it's also available for purchase.
That's true. Yeah. Ooh,
which is the route that I went because I pre-ordered it knowing it was coming out and I didn't want to miss it. So this is a permanent fixture in my library.
Excellent. Excellent. So the movie is Marshmallow, and it is a, I guess we could say it's a summer camp horror slasher themed kind of film with a bit more to it than just that. But it definitely has that look of the old throwback summer camp movies, which I love a good summer camp movie. We just don't get that many of them. And I love that. But this one, you know, does play with the I guess we could say that this movie plays with the tropes a little bit. Or a lot in some ways, but it's that kids at summer camp thing, except this one focuses also more on the campers themselves, whereas most summer camp movies really focus more on the counselors, right? And Friday the 13th is pretty much only the counselors, but even a movie like The Burning, you know, the kids are there, but it's focused on the counselors. What made you think of focusing it more on the campers themselves?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a couple things. First off, I've only ever been on the camping side of it through a school, like outdoor education program like that. So that was my experience doing like an overnight thing like that.
Right.
And the second thing is in my teenage years and my 20s, I could see where being a counselor has a bit of appeal to it, right? Yeah. Especially if you want to drink, smoke a little pot, like you get, you know, hang out with girls. But whereas when I was like 10 or 11, when I did my overnight, all of it was terrible. Like all of it was anxiety inducing and awful. And I always thought it was so fun that a fun idea to toy with. Cause like in a Friday the 13th movie, that first third, it's teenagers and they're like, this is gonna be the best summer ever. We got to have the most fun though, before those pesky kids come. And like, it's so fun and exciting. And I just thought it was so fun to go in it as from a point of anxiety and dread. And cause that's what it felt like to be 12. In my
opinion. Yeah. 100%. And I never did the summer camp where you went and there was a possibility you didn't really know anyone because it was one of those big general ones. I did summer camp, but it was through when I was young, it was either through my church. So there were other kids there that I did know, or through school. You know, we had a week camp through my school. So it was kids I went to school with already, but yeah, this definitely captures that awkwardness of kids, you know, especially one kid in particular coming in, not knowing anyone at all and having that experience. Joe, did you ever do summer camps yourself?
No, I didn't actually go camping in like at all ever in my entire life.
Really?
Until my son was in Boy Scouts. Oh, so yeah. I was like learning it alongside with him. I went to like football camp and stuff like that and mm-hmm. computer camp, but I never went to like the woods outdoors. You know, most of my summers I spent around the neighborhood, either playing pickup baseball games or tennis. So yeah. That was my,
well, if I could add, what's interesting is like, I did it through school. It was like a week in January and it was snowing and we went to an outdoor ed thing. So it's a lot of that like isolation feeling and the sort of sweatiness where Morgan, that first time he's standing there by himself, he doesn't have any friends, actually comes from like college orientation, because that was an overnight thing. And that was like, truly, I just was a kid who went to the same string of public schools for 10 plus years. And so then that student orientation, like it got to a certain point where I was like, oh, I'm in a room full of people my age. Some seem to be really good at getting along. I don't know anybody though. There's no familiarity. And like, it really seems like it's making sense for a lot of people, but it wasn't for me. And so that's kind of what I think it's fun about the summer camp structure, right? Is that it's like, there's a ton of people, especially as we get further into the 2000s, who have never even heard or been to a summer camp. But there are a ton of summer camp-like experiences, right? College or middle school, high school, you know. So I think it's very familiar.
Our main guy, is it Morgan?
Yes.
The character's name. You know, Morgan's all extremely apprehensive about making friends at this camp. Although I got to say, he ended up making a fairly decent amount of them and relatively easy, especially his first friend with May. She just walks right up and introduces herself. So, you know, good on him. Way to, you know what? At least he went. He attended.
That could be based on, I met my wife when we were in middle school and she came up and talked to me. And then you just married that person. Like, that's how my life works out. So maybe that.
Yeah, I assume that's how it works for everyone.
Yeah, it's kind of how it goes. I think, you know, it's a fun place to plan, because that's also something I remember about middle school is the heartache of losing friends. It's happening a lot. You're growing faster than you know, and your interests are changing. But also in that same breath, I feel like at the time where I was like, well, that's it, I don't have any friends, was when I made my best friend. Right. When you kind of start to go, well, I guess I'm a nerd and these are the things I like and what this is what I do with my time. Yeah. And then like your lifelong friends kind of come in with relative ease.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get too much further without you giving the listeners at home like an overview or synopsis of what, you know, we know it takes place at a camp, but why don't you give us like a general overview of what they have to expect?
Sure. Yeah. It tells the story of Morgan, who's this super anxious 12-year-old, and he experiences a profound personal tragedy. And right after, you know, he's still in the grieving process, he's sent off to this place called Camp Almar that he's been dreading. His parents signed him up because some friends from work have their kid going as well. And it's supposed to be this like really wonderful camp where kids come out of their shells. And so Morgan goes, much against his will. And of course, like any summer camp, on the first night he hears the camp's legend, which is about the doctor, right? And the story is that the doctor roams the campgrounds trying to terrorize children who are on their bunks past dark. And Morgan also has, you know, he has sleeping issues, right? He can't sleep through the night. He wakes up, he has nightmares. And one night when he wakes up from a nightmare, he thinks he sees the actual doctor, right? And when the counselors start to act all kind of cagey about his claims, him and his friends decide to band together to uncover some of the secrets behind Camp Almar.
I did have one question right off the bat. Camp Almar?
Yeah.
Is that significant, the name? How'd you come up with
that? It is. So what's funny, first off, is every proper noun in a script of mine is a thing from my life. They're like some of my neighbors' last names get the biggest laughs in any script just because it's like a real Polish last name, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everything is. And what's so cool about Danny, the director on Marshmallow, is he left a lot of that stuff in. So when I was 10, right around Morgan's age, I lost my grandfather on my mom's side. His name was Albert Morazzo. And as he was dying of cancer, and I would talk to him all about how I wanted to make movies, he would say, you know, when I'm done with this, he was in his 60s, but he was like, when I'm done with cancer, that's when I'm going to finally go for it. I'm going to go out to Hollywood and become a movie star. And he said my stage name, you know, Albert Meraz was a bit chewy, so my name would be Al Mar. That's the name that you'd see on the movie posters. And so there's a little Easter egg in Black Friday where there's a store called Almart next door to the store, the toy store, and the lights are out and it says Al Mar. And then in this one, I just put the name of the campus camp, Al Mar, to try to get Al Mar on the big screen, you know?
That's great. I figured there had to be something behind it. It was such an odd name for a camp. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. And I was certain they would change it. I'll give you another one. There is a code in there. You know what? Yeah, there's a code in the end that somebody states that is the zip code to my hometown I grew up in. I just made it a 5-digit code.
I was wondering about that one too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there, but it's just kind of like, especially when I'm writing a story and I feel like I got a lot of story beats, it's hard to think of like the real basic things sometimes, like the name of something or a code or the address somebody's going to say. And so it's like, I'll just use from my real life. But Al Mar is, that's one I'm going to be proud of for a while.
Yeah, that's great. I love that little Easter egg. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So I had a question about the actual filming process. Are you on set for any of this or much of it?
Yeah, so it was polar opposites. So Black Friday was in a production bubble. So I was on set every day because we weren't doing anything. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go every day. And it was like a summer camp for me. Marshmallow started filming the week the WGA writer's strike began. So I was supposed to go to set. We were planning a couple weeks that I would go out there and see it and meet the actors and just kind of see what Danny was doing, get an idea for Danny's vision. And I decided against it because, you know, in a lot of those unions on set were standing in solidarity with mine, which meant it would be a full set shutdown. They were able to get the movie in the span between the writers and the actor strikes. There was like 8 weeks between the two strikes. And so I did not see much throughout its post-production. And the first time I saw the finished product was in the audience at Panic Fest for its world premiere 2 months ago. Yeah. So this one has felt way more, like a gamble, like where you hand off the script and you trust people and they go off and they make it, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm really proud of what they've done. I think the movie is wonderful.
I also want to make sure we touch on, for those people, I'm trying to tempt them into watching this. You have a tremendous cast as well. So Corbin Burnson, whom everyone knows from, it was L.A. Law, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know him from Psych.
Okay.
And The Mole, Celebrity Mole.
Okay. So he plays Roy, who's Morgan's grandfather. And then, of course, one of my personal favorite actors is Paul Sauter, who most people would probably recognize as a member of the Broken Lizard gang, who was in, you know, Beer Fest and Super Troopers. Yeah. And if you still haven't pictured in your head which guy he is, he's the cop that pulls the guy over and does the 10 meows, the cat test, you know. So, yeah, and I think he portrayed the part Collins quite well as the camp leader, I guess.
Crazy, because so Club Dread was one of like the first horror comedies I discovered. That was around the same time as Shaun of the Dead. Very different movies, but just I knew it was kind of like a genre I was very into. I was like 12 years old, and so I was incredibly excited. I'm a huge Broken Lizard fan, so I was like really, really excited to have him on the project, but definitely curious because, as you were saying, like as you kind of touched on, I've only ever seen him in like very comedic performances, and Collins was always very shady, and throughout the script, the different phases, a little bit more sort of like brooding and this silent presence. And then we put in some more lines and added kind of this dramatic hook for him, and I couldn't picture it. I was just like, oh wow, I don't know what he's gonna bring to the table. And then the finished product, it blew me away. Without spoiling anything, he starts, I think, very much in a mode we're familiar with, if not a little lighter. He's being very silly with the kids and like kind of doing some dad jokes. And then the way he kind of downshifts into this almost like sinister silence is really exciting. And I feel very grateful that like an actor known for being so funny was willing to display that for our movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's tremendous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all the counselors, the other, you know, Rachel and everybody else was very well cast, very believable. They are the perfect archetypes of camp counselors, even down to the muscle guy, you know,
Kazwar.
Who's just there to get chick. Yes. And again, I got to ask, Kazwar.
Okay, that one?
It's an odd name.
That was fun. Ideas come from one of two places for me. So it's one, just life, or two, like a 2 a.m. Like I woke up and I had this dumb idea for a name. And so this was like back on Black Friday, like 5 or 6 years ago. And in the middle of the night, I woke up and I was like, oh, Kazwar is a name you would yell. Like, that's a last name that it becomes the first name. That's a name you would yell at someone. And then kind of started to plot out Marshmallow and what it would be in these counselors. And I was like, oh, is this where we find him? Is this where Kazwar is going to end up? And because you just kind of start to make that character in the head. The funniest thing is Pearson, who plays Kazwar, is like a total sweetheart. The first time I saw it, he's such a believable dick that I just thought maybe he was like that. And so I met him at the premiere and he was incredibly kind. And so that was cool. He's a really good actor.
Yeah, good.
Where did you have the premiere?
It was in Culver City.
Okay.
I think it's called the Culver Theater now. It's it is like an Amazon owned theater now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so that was put on by Warner and Todd. And so I got to my wife and I were invited to that, and it was cool. That was my first time meeting anybody like this. And so that's a strange feeling, is I went and like all the kids are still friends. They're like so thrilled to be together and hanging out. And like, I got to meet all of them, and it's crazy because the kids you see in the movie are now young adults. They have, you know, their voices are changing, and it's wild. And so that's really cool. And just seeing like the bonds and the relationships, and like so many of the people who worked on the movie were there with partners or family members who they had not told about the ending or where this story goes. And so there was like this really fun excitement. Like we filmed this 2 years ago. So it's just kind of felt like this circle of people that I'm kind of a part of, where it's like, okay, we're sitting on this fun thing and we just want to talk about it. So I'm very wordy tonight. I'm sorry, but the opportunity to talk about it is really exciting.
It is a podcast. We kind of want you to be wordy.
We want you talking. Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
The currency is words.
Have the kids. Yeah. I bet the kids have aged quite a bit. You know, they must look quite a bit older since you filmed it 2 years ago and they were teenagers or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and especially like it's very jarring. We did a Q&A after the Panic Fest premiere, and that was like, so everybody just saw him cue up on the screen, you know, for an hour and a half in his high pitched like 12-year-old voice, and then he does the Q&A, and to me at least, it felt like he was like, "Hello, everybody," you know, and he, like, a consummate professional too. So that's the other thing now, is that they sound like adults and they speak like adults in conversation. It's crazy, because I was 14, I didn't talk like that.
Yeah.
And I barely talk like that now. So, but they are great. I'll say this too, something that's strange, and I hope this makes sense. It's so strange because I'm so used to, like, you know, if a kid came up to me, a child, and they were like, "Hey, I need some help riding a bike," I'd be like, "Yeah, I know how to do that better than you. I'm an adult."
Right.
And like, or if they, you know, and so it's so strange to see these kids who, all of them in the movie, there's like a dozen of them who act way better than I could like ever. Like, I don't know that I could give them a note or be like, "Here's what," like, they're just so good at what they do and they're so young. I hope to see them all just thrive. They were so talented.
Are they continuing to work?
Yeah, as far as I know, Hugh and Kai, so that's Morgan and Pilar, are both kind of, they stayed in the horror space a little bit. Hugh's got a couple festival films coming out. Sketch is one. I know that one. I know he was in a film called Sketch, and Kai was in a movie called Ba, I believe. And those are both in the horror space, but also like, I think I know Max is in for a bunch of stuff, and Dylan, who plays Sam, who I think gets some of the best swears in the movie. is the funniest person in any room I've been in with him. And so like, I'm just waiting for Dylan is going to be huge. I feel he's excellent.
I just looked up Q on his IMDb page and he's got four projects that are upcoming. Don't Open the Door, From Dark Eyes to Winter Eternity. My Number One, and a short called Biscuit. So yeah,
damn,
he's not dropping. Good for him.
No way. No, he's, I mean, yeah, incredible. And that's kind of the thing is, I wrote this as an imaginary project. Now I'm at the point I have two in. So I feel like I have to be a little more serious when I'm writing. But like, I wrote this script going like, yeah, in the world where this gets made, we would need to find a kid who could commit to a really difficult performance, right? That would, all these kids, right? I never thought it was going to get made. And so then the reality of a lot of this stuff sets in. And I really, I'm glad I got to thank all of them at the premiere. Whether it's Hugh committing to scenes where he has to live through trauma. And I learned in post-production, he actually had a drowning scare at a young age.
Oh, wow.
And that really influenced his connection to the character. Or, you know, Max, who plays Dirk, who in the script is exclusively referred to as Doink / Dirk. But, you know, Doink gets bullied and gets some pretty abhorrent things said to him. And so it's a sensitive script to hand off to somebody because you'd want to make sure, like, it's clear that the bullies are the bad. They're not, what they're saying about you is bad and inappropriate. Right. And so there was a lot of that almost kind of like reckoning I had to do when the movie was made, right? Which is like, okay, they did this. These kids kind of were pushed to these limits. I mean, even Kai's, without spoiling, the very last thing you see Kai, her last scene, Pilar's final moments, which you take a look at it and it's like pretty heavy, I think. That was her first day on set. So like they got her to set and they were just they're throwing you to the wolves. Yeah. And so I think about that a lot. First day on set, you're going to do a scene. It's her and an adult actor. Like none of the fun kid stuff, getting to know each other. And so they just were thrown in the deep end and swam like champs.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the camp, where was the shot at? You guys didn't have to like, I'm assuming you took over an existing camp.
Took over an existing camp that I got to double check. I think it's operational, but it wasn't in C then. They were like, they filmed in May to June and maybe they were a couple weeks short, but it was in a place called Camp Kaisok in Kentucky, in Carrollton, Kentucky. Real camp. And I think they only had to build a few exteriors, but it's interesting because it's perfect, right? Like there's a scene where we meet all the counselors and Kavar is like lifting weights and Franklin kind of comes in. He's like, what are you doing? And like the first time I saw that, I was, and this is after not being on set at all, I was like, this is exactly the way I pictured it. Like the way I pictured the space to look. And obviously that goes to our set decorators and the props department, but also I think the location scouts found just such like a classic timeless summer camp. And like I put in the script that Morgan is in bunk 16 and he and just because I was, that's a number I like, and he is, they had a ton of bunks, they had plenty of cabins and everything, and they were like great, and they were able to find it just because like it is exactly what you would imagine a camp to be. Middle of nowhere though, I heard, not like fun to do anything else.
Yeah.
I hope they did the swimming scenes in the lake. I hope that was later, like June, so the water was warmer.
Yeah.
But
me too. Or that I just, and it looks so cool, like cooler than I ever could have imagined. But I just keep thinking about those scenes where he's at the kitchen table with Corbin and they're up to their waist in water. And I'm like, that had to be a nightmare. They had to just be sitting in wet denim. Hugh had to wear a lot of wet denim and cargo shorts for this movie. And so that, I commend him. I hope it was bearable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they?
Well, I'm sure if it wasn't, they would have yanked it.
They would tell me. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. It would be kind of cool if they, I doubt they did, but did they stay at the camp while they were
nearby.
Filming? Nearby.
Nearby.
Okay.
In a hotel, and I unclear, I should ask if the crew did, because that was for a bit. It was like, oh, maybe if the bunks are set up and if it's safe, we'll stay there. It'll be like summer camp.
Yeah.
But I wasn't on set, so I I don't know, but I know it was like late nights hanging out, summer camp. Bonfires, like I said, there was just like this sense of community. And I even was just listening to Danny talk about how you even started to get like that counselor camper bond between some of the older kids and the younger campers. And it's cool. I think if a movie set goes well, you feel like that, right? You feel like, okay, we're a little summer camp. Or to talk about Black Friday, like, all right, we're a little retail team in here. We're stuck in the store. And so I like that is so astronomically impressive. Just like that chemistry they got on set. I wouldn't be surprised if some people lived on set.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I don't know. I can't guarantee.
Yeah. How long did it take you from, you know, getting the idea to finishing I mean, I guess through the rough draft and everything to get it to where you were ready to have somebody look at it?
Yeah. So my first idea, I keep insane notes everywhere. So I record the first recorded evidence, the first script name for Marshmallow, it was originally called Camp Spooky. And the doctor was Dr. Spooky. And that, I don't know that that was a good idea. They changed it and I get it. But I found the first evidence of Camp Spooky that was in like 2017 in a note in my phone where I started chopping up this idea. And then I now have compiled it. I have emails from different jobs I've had throughout 2018 and 2019 where I'm typing out the story, the ideas, where it's going to go. And then it was on set of Black Friday in the last quarter of 2020 where I actually kind of started writing it. And on that set was when the producer, Warner Davis, was like, what's next? Like, what do you want to do next? And I pitched him first this idea for a Christmas, like an epic R-rated Christmas movie that kind of that's all about the biblical rapture happening on the last Christmas on Earth. And he, with a straight face, was like, I don't think that could cost any less than $20 million. So anything else that's less expensive? And I said, well, I got this story. It's a slasher. And what I said was, I've got a twist. I've got a hook that I think answers my big question, which is how come the Friday the 13th movies always focus on the counselors and not the campers? And he was like, you're writing a movie where the slasher goes after the kids. And I said, yeah. And he said, if you write it, I'll read it. And if I like it, we'll make it. And then I put my nose down, and that was right around Christmas time. And the day I finished the first draft was February 3rd of 2021. And like that week, Warner was like, we're going to make this happen. And that we didn't get it greenlit for another 2 years. But yeah, he was cooking with gas trying to get that made. And then I met Danny on Black Friday. He works in post on Black Friday. And then we just kind of, I'd seen some of his directorial work and we started chopping it up. And it really just felt like one of those things where it's like, he's never, Danny never comes in to like step on an idea or like correct an idea. I just feel like he'll kind of go, great, give me your idea. And then I'm going to take it somewhere you didn't know it could go, right? Visually, emotionally. And so it was just something that felt so totally great that by the time it was made clear, like Warner called me the night we greenlit it, I signed the contract. Then he called me the week before I was supposed to go out to Kentucky for the start of shooting to say, WGA is going to strike. You got to get every thought out to me basically before midnight, right? Anything you want me to put into this movie, any ideas. And so I put everything. I told him everything all the way down to I just posted a picture on my Instagram of what I sent him to answer, like how the name Dirk could look like the word doink. Like I wrote that out and kind of said, here's what I was thinking and everything. And so it was all the way up till then, May 2023, and then nothing. And then it was made. And that is crazy. It truly was Schrodinger's movie, where it was like, you're going to give away your script, close this box, and you're just going to have to believe us when we tell you there is a movie being made out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be hard to do because you just gave up your baby. Yeah. It would be hard.
It's strange. It's strange. You know, I'm proud of this one, which that's not actually, I'm proud of all, you know, everything I write, but it was one that I really cared about and hoped it would be made with care and love. And, you know, it's all you could do. The shoot started and I believed in Danny. And personally, paid off, right? I think he did an excellent job. And but yeah, it was very scary. It was, like I said, very different from like, well, circumstantially I could just be on set every day because the world's in a pandemic, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
I want to talk a little bit about the character design of the doctor.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm like sure
the costume, you mean?
Yeah. Well, even just the concept of the character, first off, it's a fantastic story that they tell the kids from a counselor's point of view.
Right.
Because all the counselors want to do is get these damn kids into their bunks so they can go fool around with the other counselors. Mm-hmm. And what better way to do that than to scare the kids into staying in a bed?
Yeah.
So it's a great concept to throw on these kids at camp. But I'm sure lots of people at one time or another saw Friday the 13th when they were growing up and they thought to themselves, oh, I want to make a movie like that. Or I want to make just any other scary movie or slasher movie. And the one thing that everybody gets hung up on is how can I invent a villain that nobody hasn't seen before?
Right.
Or what can I do for him that nobody else has done? So tell me a little bit about the ideas behind this doctor.
Yeah. Well, first off, I just tried to, and thank you. I really tried to break down what scary stories are, what campfire stories are. They made a horror movie out of my town's urban legend. There's an indie horror called Munger Road. And that is in Illinois. There's a road called Munger Road. And the thing is, hey, if you go over the train tracks and you put baby powder on your bumper and you drive over the tracks, you'll see little ghost handprints that shoved your car. And people get too scared and they say, stay away from Munger Road.
Isn't that Crybaby Bridge? Isn't that what they call that?
That's awesome. I love that there's others or that it has another name.
That's the one that's how I had heard it named was Crybaby Bridge. So, yeah.
But they all boil down to, don't fuck around on the bridge. Don't stop fucking around on the train track, right? Yeah. And so I go, okay, we want to get the campers to stay in their bunks, right? And, you know, I just kind of thought like, okay, who's this camp's slasher and toying around with this idea of, and something that always really scared me as a kid. So there's a campground named after a man named Laredo Taft in Illinois. And that's where we went. As a kid, went for three nights or two nights as a 10-year-old. There's two things I want to talk about. One, something that always freaks me out is how much they talked about the past. Because the whole thing was like, and 100 years ago, this is how they were living. This is what they did 100 years ago. And it almost kind of felt like a threat. And so I really like to toy with, okay, what was this place? Hey, before you kids were even here, what was this place? You know, you didn't even understand it. And so that was a big part of it, you know, that this doctor kind of roams the campground. And I always love that punchline. That's just something that happened in my real life where somebody's telling a scary story, but they have a plant across the crowd who's going to scream at the end and scare everybody. So it was really just kind of building that out and then going, if I made this is how a lot of my ideas start. If I had to make this for $0, what would he look like? And so I have on my phone, I posted up my Instagram, my doodles of what the doctor would look like. And the best I could come up with was like, we would use a welder's mask, but also we would somehow fuse a KN95 to the front and a leather apron over it. And I was like, this, I think we can, I don't know that it'll look good, but this would be my $0 approach. And then it was like, okay, it kind of looks like a doctor. And then it kind of, like, it's a weird way it kind of became what it is, but it was just like, what's the cheap version of this that wouldn't cost money? The other thing is I wanted something that prompted curiosity and an answer that was maybe a little more tricky than the question. And what I'll do without explaining the movie is when I went to Laredo Taft, there was always this urban legend. And it was, or not urban legend, just a thing. If you go to sleep, they have curfew at 9:30. You got to go to bed. We're all 10 years old. And if you wake up in the middle of the night and you look over where your teacher is supposed to be sleeping, because there was a teacher assigned to every room, they won't be there. Right. And God knows what they're doing. And there was rumors that, you know, they were monsters, they were witches or whatever. And finally, one year, maybe my year or a year before mine, a kid snuck out of his bunk in the middle of the night because the teachers weren't there and he wanted to see where it was. And he found them in the mess hall, sharing a bottle of wine. Right. And it's like, oh, they're not monsters. The weird answer, the twist is they're adults who are probably, this is the one time these underpaid adults get to have like a little fun at their job. And like, it's, and I think that's kind of how I approached all of Marshmallow, which is like, I don't, the answers we're going to find maybe are going to be a little complicated and they're going to be a little bit like, oh, the teachers drink wine. Like, it's like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know. But you're kind of getting fed this information. Like, yeah, adults are just kind of humans who are trying their best, and their secrets are just their humanity. And like the fact that they're maybe a little flawed or like to have fun. And so that was always kind of the heart of the Doctor and Al Marr. And all of it was like the flaw in the human condition, I think. Mm-hmm. Right. I heard this quote in a writing course, I think, that it, a lot of people know, which is just no good villain thinks they're the villain. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that was the other thing, is that ultimately I hope when we get to know the Doctor, you walk away going, I get it. I don't maybe endorse it, but I could see why they think what they're doing is correct.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of different kind of answers, but those were all the things I did to kind of reverse engineer the story. And then lastly, I thought if the script is too short, they need to film the scary story. Like they want to pad it out and kind of film it. I wanted to write something that could be verbally or visually exciting. Like, what could we tell? But also, hey, if they want to show, you know, if we have it in the budget. So that, did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, I really like that aspect of it too, where there's the legend, you know, because with the summer camp that I went to, both summer camps I went, well, not the church one as much. They had little stories, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But the one that I went to through my school, the counselors did tell this story of a maniac out in the woods who was carried a torch through the woods at night looking for campers. And then they had a plan, you know, one of the counselors was dressed up in this mask and he had this giant torch, which he ran through with this huge torch, ran through and scared everybody. And all the kids got scared. So, this was, I think we were in middle school, maybe, I think was what it was. And the counselors, I think the counselors were college kids, maybe, or even high school kids. I don't really remember now, but there was this sense that, you know, it was a little unnerving because the counselors were just kind of young people too. And you're like, these guys are in charge of us. And there were adults, but there were only a few of them. And really the main people running your day were these, you know, either high school students or college students. And so it's that kind of sense of it too is a little unnerving because, you know, they're still kind of young themselves, you know, and they're in charge.
Yeah. I've talked more about summer camp this year, obviously, than I have in a long time. The entire concept terrifies me. There's nothing about it that that sounds exciting. It's so scary, every aspect of it. And like, that's a big one too, where it's just like, I know that feeling, same thing, the outdoor ed program I did, where it's like everything in my house, I was very fortunate, made sense. I liked it. I liked my parents and my siblings and everything was good. Why would I ever leave that? Why would I ever leave that? And to be taught by kids or to be taught by whoever the staff were at Laredo Taft or whatever. And so it's, I just think it's so ripe. And I always thought it was so funny how many movies make it look like a blast. And I'm sure plenty of people around the globe find summer camp to be a blast. I just could not imagine a more dreadful place.
Yeah. I always enjoyed it by the end, you know, it started out, weird, but most of the ones I went to, I knew the kids. So if I had done the one where the parents send you off to summer camp and you don't know anyone, or maybe you know a couple kids, that would be really nerve-wracking to me, especially if everyone else knew somebody. You know, that would be hard to do because you're stuck there, you know, in some of these camps, they spend like a good part of the summer there, not just like a week, you know.
Right. So. I'll tell you another one from my adult life that influenced this movie. I did I've done comedy stuff for the past like 9 years on and off. And I did comedy writing classes at Groundlings and at UCB. And like every once in a while you would sign up for a class, like an intensive, and it would be like a one night or two night thing, 3 hour classes. And there was no worse feeling. I would always get there early before anybody. And there was no worse feeling than another person walking in the room and you're both kind of sitting there quietly. And then a third person walks in and they know each other.
Yeah.
Like, and so that scene, there's a scene where like Morgan enters his cabin and CJ comes in, but CJ's got like his other friend. And like that to me is a tragedy. That whole scene, it's just like, that is the greatest nightmare, because you're at least hoping like, okay, I'll connect with my bunkmate. Like, this is the guy I got to live with. And it's like, sure, shit, he knows someone. Like, these are in a movie full of like, obviously I want the doctor to be scary and I want the camp to be scary and everything. But it's like, I also wanted to include these like very real moments. You walk out of the movie and you realize a lot of it's fake, it's make-believe, but it's like bullying's real, and bullies are unrelenting. If a bully knows you don't swim, a solid bully, they will make sure you swim. Like, it's just, growing up is terrible, and it's full of all of these like traps, right? That swim test scene is like, as an adult, if somebody's like, you have to swim to a place and then swim back, and I was like, no, it would be no problem. But as a kid, it's like, you're kind of pushed on that stuff, and it's terrible having to like defend your opinions. And so like, as much as I think the doctor chasing these kids is a horror story, the level of existence and like autonomy you're given at 12 is a horror movie in and of itself.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out too, I'm assuming nobody that listens to this podcast is squeamish, but assuming they are, I do want to point out this, there's this not a lot of blood and gore in this particular film. It is plenty of jump scares, plenty of suspense, and some of the effects in there are phenomenal. And the one I wanted to get at, make sure that we discuss, is right at the beginning with the water coming out of the kid's chest.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was very well, very off-putting for the first like 30 seconds of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Bob Kurtzman and Marcy King are absolute legends in their field. They created that whole rig. They designed the doctor. What's funny is the doctor in a lot of the shots is portrayed by Louis Kurtzman, Bob's son, who played Emmett in Black Friday, who also shit kicked out of him a lot. So I'm 2 for 2 on movies where Louis Kurtzman is getting shit thrown around. So sorry about number 3. But I saw the movie Tusk in theaters in 2014 on opening weekend. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, but that walrus,
huge
the first
fan
thing,
of Tusk.
Dude, and the first time I saw that walrus, it genuinely scared the shit out of me. Like, I went into the movie, and I've told Bob this 1,000 times. I went into that movie going, how do they do a scary walrus suit? And I walked out going, they nailed it. They got it. And it was really good. And so as soon as we got into the world of rubber monsters in Black Friday, I want to work with the people who scared me. I want to work with the people, like, how do you scare people? Work with the people who scared you. And so early in my career, like, I'm so incredibly lucky to be able to work with these legends. Yeah. And you see stuff like, I've seen people's reactions. I saw somewhere on social media somebody talking about how disturbed they were by that opening scene. Mm-hmm. And I just like to think, like, just as disturbed as I was with the walrus suit, like, did we do to you what this man did to me?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we perpetuate this cycle. And and so I there's so much in this movie. There are some, even a little bit of gore we get, and I'm just like, oh my God, this is so cool. So all glory to them. They are incredible.
Yeah.
What's next for you? Are you working on anything? You have anything coming up that you could talk about?
Nothing particularly coming up. It's funny because Marshmallow has been like such a drum roll for so long that like this past week has really been a lot of just like enjoying it. You know, there's been a lot of positive feedback. And so I've really just been kind of appreciating it. And like, people who want to talk about the ending or share what the movie meant to them, like, I just really have been appreciating that. I would love to, obviously, to keep working on my stuff. I'm working on a home invasion thriller. that I'd really like to, again, just trying to see, like, I kind of like, this is my submission for a summer camp slasher, and Black Friday was my submission for, like, my kind of thing body horror movie. I got my submission now for my home invasion thriller. And also, I might have mentioned this, it's my dream to do an anthology. Whether it's be an entry in an anthology or write an anthology, that's what got me in, you know, to horror. I think the last time I was on, we talked about Trick or Treat, and Tales from the Dark Side, Twilight Zone the movie, Creepshow. And so it's like, I think that would be like a goal of mine to have an entry in any way, shape or form, micro or macro, into the anthology horror world.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're obviously the writer. These are your projects. But if I could make one small recommendation, when you are looking for a name for this home invasion, I would just simply call it Almar.
There we go. You know what?
Almar is interesting enough. People's curiosity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Almar will just be my blanket title for
that. Yeah. There you go. Or your little...
I'll give you one. Their Almar shipping logistics is in another script out there. It pops up in every one.
It's your little Easter egg.
Yeah.
It's an Easter egg. Unintentional. Again, I thought with full confidence they would change it. And then after the movie wrapped and the strikes wrapped, Danny lives in Chicago. My folks do too. So I was home visiting family, and me and Danny got a coffee. And it was really anxious for me because it was the first time we'd sat down one-on-one. Because anytime we talked, the producer was there. It was the first time we'd done that. And also the first time I would know anything about the movie. And my first question for him was, what did you change the camp name to? And his first question for me was, okay, so we kept the camp name. What does it mean? And it was just like so perfect and wonderful. And, you know, it's crazy because I obviously at least try to address in some therapeutic way the passing of my own grandfather at a young age. Didn't happen anything like in the movie. But, you know, it's a special project. You know, to wrap it all up, I told Danny that I had a realization over the, like, to wrap all this word vomit up. I told Danny when we were at Panic Fest, I had a realization when I was 10. In the span of like 10 weeks, when I was 10 years old, I lose my grandpa to lung cancer. And at his funeral, I discover a mass on my body and go into the hospital for a week where I have surgery. I'm rolled into the surgery room. I meet the guy in the mask. It freaks me out. And then like a month after that, I was sent to outdoor ed at my school. And so I told Danny, I think that's just the story of these 10 weeks in my life. And it's kind of, there were doctors and surgeries and loss and hospitals and camp, and it just sort of all compounded together.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I also wanted to tip my hat to the artwork for the movie poster.
Danny.
It's so like great. A painting. It's fantastic. I'm just thrilled when everybody doesn't do the 1980s. We just invented Photoshop and the faces, you know, all those movies that came out in the late 80s, early 90s. So this 90s. Is tremendous artwork. I love this.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's funny because I forever was like, I don't know how you advertise it. I don't know what the poster is. And I talked to the producer for a while and he was like, I think it'll probably just be the doctor's face, like a close up of the doctor's face with the headlight lamp on. And then Danny submitted to the production team, what about something like this? And he sent his kind of mock-up of what he thought it should look like. And that's the poster that got released. He made that. And then that's we got. I love that poster. That's right. I can take no credit for it. But
it's fantastic. It works great.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very much like a throwback kind of poster too. 80s kind of throwback poster. Yeah.
That's the thing. I want to invite people to, you know, feel something maybe a little bit familiar. And then I want to hopefully smack you across the face with something you have never seen. I hope it works. Yeah. But it's a good time.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a very fun movie. So everyone out there, please go on Amazon or wherever you rent your movies, Apple TV Plus or whatever,
Don't and, rent it. Just buy the damn
Or buy thing. It. Yeah, buy it. Yeah. At least rent it, but go ahead and buy it. Sure. Yeah.
Thank you for either. I appreciate all of it.
It's, yeah.
I'm of the impression that I guarantee you those people that are going to really get into this, they're going to rent it and they're going to kick themselves because then they're going to have to go back and, then
and buy it
again.
Yeah.
and that's my thing. I try to tell people like the goal from the jump with me, with Danny, with everybody was we wanted to make a movie you have to watch twice because we hear from a lot of people like you're watching the first half of this movie or the first third and you're going, the characters are weird. The adults are responding confusingly.
Yeah.
They speak weird. What's this kind of social currency? And then hopefully by the end you go, wait a minute and go back and watch it all. And it maybe plays a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to tell anybody what to you with your hard earned money. I appreciate anyone, but the idea was that you'd have to watch it twice.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And actually Joe and I were kind of talking about that the other day that it is like when you first see that movie, Marshmallow, there are some things that happen that you're like, what, why would that happen? Yeah. You know? And it like makes you go, what, I don't understand why they did that, but it all is revealed in the end and why people are behaving the way they are. It's a fascinating, really, really good movie.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Andy, for joining us again. It was great having you and we love, you know, we love to see, you know, these young new filmmakers and you've given us a couple now to talk about and I really hope you just keep cranking out the horror movies. Them out. Yeah. The guy, I can't remember who you said was, after Black Friday, the producer said, what do you got next? Is he asking you now, what do you got next or what is his,
It's always what's next. And it's funny because with Warner, like I'm always the one who's like, and let's kick back and enjoy. And he's like, no, the work continues. We have to keep going. So
we need a new one.
Somebody bets it's me. But hopefully the next one it comes sooner than later.
I'm betting within 2 years I see at the movie theaters Almar.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah.
Thank you. Fingers crossed.
I gotta see that.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. And do you have any aspirations for directing at all? Or you just want to stay with the writing or what do you feel?
I'd love to direct. I would love to. I planned just cards on the table to shadow Danny in the 2 weeks I was going to set and kind of be like, let's like see the day of a director.
Right.
Because admittedly, I would go to set on Black Friday and just be like, cool, the toy store, like every day.
Yeah.
So let me see what the day-to-day looks like. Let me really watch how he handles problems and all that. And that was impossible. So I want to shadow somebody or kind of see how the sausage is made a bit more. Andy Palmer, who was our editor on Marshmallow, is a prolific director. And I spent some time on set for his movie, The Reeducation of Molly Singer, which I believe is on Netflix. Check it out. And so I've really gotten to connect with some wonderful filmmakers and stuff. And so I think I just want to spend a little more time with them to kind of get the language of it, if it makes sense. Certainly, I would love to just see what, you know, to pull that two-hander. I would love to try it one day.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to seeing more from you. And, you know, I hope that people check out Marshmallow and I hope it becomes huge. I have a feeling this is one of those things that will get a cult following and it will just build and grow from there. And people, especially coming up this fall, people looking for something to watch for, you know, October and all of that, this would be great. Or actually perfect for summer, because I always get in the mood to watch a Friday the 13th type thing or The Burning or whatever. I love those camp horror movies. So this would be perfect. And there aren't enough of them. There's plenty. Seems like we've had a resurgence of a lot of things, including, I mean, vampires come and go, but they always come back, and then ghosts or whatever. And then you know, we see possessions every now and then, and we see, you know, there's a lot of subgenres. The slasher has come back, but the camp slasher is one that we don't see enough of, I feel like. And so although there's a couple, yours, yep. Marshmallow, and what is it? Killer of a Summer or something like that.
Hell of a Summer.
Hell of a Summer. Yeah. And that came out, I think we watched that just a couple weeks before yours. And that was a fun camp movie too. So,
yeah.
All right. Great. So, what are we doing next time, Joe? Is it my pick?
No.
Oh, no. The next episode is Vincent DeSanti. That's right. So yes. next time on CineScare, we don't have picks to watch. We will be doing an interview with Vincent DeSanti, the director of the Never Hike Alone Friday the 13th franchise and everything, yes. Which Never Hike Alone 2, CineScare is a producer of. And we also check out if you haven't already, check out his DVDs of the new Blu-rays, I think, of Never Hike Alone 2, because the CineScare, we along with Mark, did some like a commentary track for the Blu-ray. Oh. So along with Vincent, actually. So so he'll be here to talk about Ghosts in the Fog, right? Is that what it's called, Joe? Ghosts in the Fog?
I believe so.
Yeah, yes. That which is his new animated Friday the 13th movie that they are going to be they're trying to fund right now on Kickstarter or GoFundMe, one of the, I think GoFundMe. So he'll be here next time and that will be not in 2 weeks, it'll be in 3 weeks, because is 4th of July, and we're not going to release an episode on 4th of July. It's going to be on July 11th. So that'll
be showing our patriotism by not doing anything that
that's
day.
Right. Love yeah.
Yeah.
Or lack of patriotism, whatever the case may be.
Or either way.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again, Andy, for joining us. So we'll give you a little smattering of applause.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And again, everybody, please go out and see Marshmallow, rent it or buy it. Joe, do you have anything else?
No, just buy the movie.
Yeah, buy the movie. Check it out. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
That's simple. Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. Watch it. Yeah. You're going to love it.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, all right. We will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
It was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
This is a ceaseless career.